Blog Talk Radio.
I am an endangered species, but I sing no victim song. I am a woman. I am an artist. And I know where my voice belongs.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Gary Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
She just wants to be beautiful. She goes unnoticed. She knows no limits. She craves attention. She praises an image. She prays to be sculpted by the sculptor. Oh, she don't see the light that's shining. Deep within the eyes can find it. Maybe we're made of blind souls. She tries to cover up her pain and cut her woes away. As cover girls don't cry after the face is made. But there's a hope that's waiting for you.
See a little bit clearer. The light that shines within.
There's a hope.
is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Roots Rock Salon. Healthy roots, healthy hair. Our expert stylists will help you shine naturally beautiful. We offer everything from hydrating shampoo, conditioning hair mask, oil steam treatments to lock in the cuticle, and an array of natural styles and programs to promote healthy hair growth using professional products. Book your consultation today online at RootsRockSalon.com. Visit us at 72 Harrison Avenue, West Orange, New Jersey, or call us at 973-957-7800.
All right, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have with us guests that you kind of just recently were introduced to, and I wanted them to come back to the show to tell us a little bit more. And I've got to say, first of all, Takiya, you know, just having you and Cammy on the show, we got so much wonderful response about this incredible book and her being such a wonderful, wonderful author. So real good excitement. I want to get you guys back on and talk a little bit more. So welcome back to the show for both of you this morning. Welcome back.
Thank you. We are excited to be here.
Awesome. Okay, I want to jump right on with Cammy and Cammy's Spa Party, which is an incredible book. Again, let's remind everybody first. Cammy, you're what, about 11 years old or so?
Yes, I'm 11.
11. And here you are, a published author. How does that feel?
It feels good.
Okay. Well, listen, tell us a little bit about what Cammy's Spa Party is all about.
Spa Party is a book that I created when I was 7 years old because at the time my mom owned a hair salon and kids were like really, 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 really scared to go to the salon. So with like the kids being very scared, like my mom brought up the idea of why not making a book about it. And at the time, I was just bored, so I said, sure. And then at the age of 6, I was writing. And then at the age of 7, we had the book published.
Wow. And how did that make you feel?
It felt good that I was a young person making books.
Yes. And I've got to ask you, Cammy, how about the kids at your school? How did they feel about you having a book called Cammy's Spa Party? How did they feel about that?
I didn't tell them.
What? Okay. Not at first. You didn't mention it to them at first?
No. I didn't mention it because I don't know why, but I just didn't want to.
Okay. Okay.
But I did tell them. I told my friend today that I create my friend. Her name's Elena, and we go to school together. And she sits next to me in ELA. And I had told her that I created a book.
And what was her response?
She said, "Oh, that's nice." And then we had a shush because we had to go back to class.
I'm loving this. Okay, listen, if you guys have just joined us out there, you're listening to an all-new edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show, and I have a very, very special guest
that who was recently with us, and I'm so happy to have her back on the show. We're talking about Cami Love. Now, she is the author of this incredible book. Now, let me just say, she's 11 years old and has is already a published author. The book is called Cami's Spa Party. So, Cami, I know you led in a little bit with what it's about. Kind of remind everybody again a little bit what Cami's Spa Party is all about.
Cami's Spa Party is about telling kids and letting kids know that it's not that bad to be able to get your hair done. Like, getting your hair washed is fine. And you get to get, like, if you have germs in your hair, you get to get the germs out. And you, like, it's just a lot of fun about the book that I loved about it. And then, like, I would introduce it to all my friends, and they would be like, yeah, this is really cool. Like, I used to be scared to go to the hair salon, and it's kind of making it better, and I'm getting more comfortable with having to go get my hair done.
Wow. And when you look at the wonderful pictures, it's so beautiful to see just, you know, from folks that look like my family, you know, it looks amazing. The cover, I love it. Great artwork. Really well done. Again, Cami's Spa Party. Yes, Cami. So now, are you going to be writing more books?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to share anything, any idea that you might have already, or you want to wait and tell us a little later?
I'll tell you guys now a little bit of it. A few years ago, I was thinking of writing a book about denim because I was watching Lila Poles, I think it was, on YouTube when she was, like, famous.
Okay.
And when Vine was famous as well, it was, like, a funny laughing video thing on YouTube. And whenever that was famous, I was, like, I want, like, because she had made a skit of Denim Girl, which was, like, a superhero, and the superhero did everything in denim. So I was thinking of making a book about that. And then since a few years ago, and my logo for, like, my book has always been unicorns because when I made the book, my favorite colors were pink and purple. Since I made that book, my favorite colors have changed a lot from, like, going through clear, white, black, red, blue, green, pink, hot pink, white, different colors. My favorite color has never really changed from red since I made that book.
Wow.
So I'm probably going to change up the ideas of making a unicorn book and making girl book because, like, I'm a little bit older now.
Well, it sounds like it. Okay. Well, first of all, I have to say thank you for just taking the time to be a guest on our show. And I know you always shout out your mom and dad, your siblings, your brothers, you know, so thank you so much for just doing what you're doing and keep on being a writer and just all that you're doing out there and with all the books and just more about Cami's Spa Party. I can't wait to see what else is next. All right.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you for being on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And thank you. Okay. Now, hold it. I've got to talk to Takiya Smith. Takiya, good morning again. The mom of Cami. Yes.
Good
wow.
morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. First of all, it's great to have you back on the show. That's number one, to have both you and Cami on the show again, because this is really important. I really don't know too many, like, young folks who are published authors. I don't know too many adults who are. So this is big, big news, big things here. So how does that make you feel that it's received so well?
It makes me feel really good. I'm so proud of her.
Yeah.
She just did her book donation for the backpack drive. And
wow.
So the kids are writing and saying thank you for the book. My niece got the workbook and the reading book, and that was her first time getting it. So she was really excited.
Nice.
She said her mom, need more of these workbooks. So her mom's like, okay, we have to order more. Give me a few days and we'll get some more ordered. So I'm excited that she is. Are enjoying the work that she puts in.
Absolutely. Well, also, we can kind of tell now, you're a licensed cosmetologist. And
yes,
that's kind of what was the impression that you guys made, like you made on Cami when she was younger and would come to the shop. So, which inspired the book. So really good stuff. And tell us about your career in cosmetology. What inspired you to become a cosmetologist?
Well, I went to cosmetology school in high school, and it was because I wanted to learn how to do my own hair. I have very curly hair, and it was difficult to maintain. So when I was about probably 11 or 12, my mom relaxed it, and then I was like, okay, let's figure this out. So trying to get it back to natural and then just wearing it in a natural state. I had to learn how to do it and maintain it myself. So that's why I went to cosmetology school.
Wow.
And so I loved that. I enjoyed my high school years in cosmetology and everything. And then when I became a licensed cosmetologist, I decided that I wanted to give back to the youth. So that's when I opened up Whirly Pamper Kids Spa, which was the children's hair salon that Cammie talks about in her books. And that was such a fun experience, just being around the children and getting to be their first hair salon visit and, styling their hair, asking questions about their own.
Well, this can be a little traumatizing at first for some.
Yes.
You know, it's a big deal. I remember going to the barbershop for my first cut, and I remember my brother teasing me, one of my older brothers. So I know it can stay with you for a long time. So this wonderful book by Cammie makes it a little bit easier. So it really, really Cammie's Spa Party. Okay. Well, so what is this like having an author in the family?
It's awesome to have her in the family. I'm also an author. It kind of works hand in hand.
Get out of here. Well, I don't think we talked about that. Well, you've got to tell us a little bit about your book.
My book is called Pendulum of a Mother's Love, and it's about the relationship between mothers and daughters. And we talk, me and my mom are best friends, and whenever we would go out places, because we worked together for like 15 years, but whenever we would go out to places, people were like, oh, I wish me and my mom were that close, or, you know, I wish I could do this with my mom. So I gathered a different author to write about their relationship with their mother and how it started and how it ended. Some of the mothers were no longer here with us.
Right.
And how they would, things that they would want to do with their mother if they had the opportunity. And that book is inspiring those that still have their mother here with them that may not get along with them to be able to sit down and have at least a decent conversation and kind of mend the fences. Because we need so much more positive relationships between mothers and daughters out here today.
Wow. Well, I'm loving it. I really am. And I have to tell you, we're going to have to talk more about your wonderful book as well right here on the show and give some tips on kind of mending those friendships and actually in the case of the book, the relationships. I've got to say, because this is something that I've wanted to cover on the show as well, because I think that this is a great germ of an idea. It really is. And it's so needed. Oh, boy, is it needed. So, Now, so they can get your book where? Where can we get copies of this in your book?
Online on my website. It's authortakia.mystrikingly.com. So that's https author takia mystrikingly.com.
Okay. And we're going to have to get things set up for you right here at the Hair Radio Morning Show as
Absolutely.
Well. Yeah. Okay. I'm so excited, Takia. I really am. So now what do you hope is next for both of you and for Cammie as well?
For me, I believe is doing more of the hair. There may be some things unwrapped soon, so I'm hoping to get those things out in the air soon. And then for Cammie, I want her to finish her next book project. I wanted her, or I'm trying to convince her to do something with military dependents, so we'll see how it goes.
Wow. Well, I can't wait for all of this. I really can't. And this, I feel, is just the beginning. So you're getting used to finding your way around the corridors at Hair Radio.
Yes.
Any early thoughts? Any early thoughts you want to share with everybody today? We'll put you on the spot.
Of the mission and the goal of Hair Radio, it's not like when I was coming up in the cosmetology world, there weren't a lot of avenues out there that I knew of. So this is really good.
Awesome.
So I'm excited to see how it goes and continues to grow.
Absolutely. Well, listen, and just you bringing what you have to the table is going to just help us as well to accomplish everything. So I'm really, really excited. And you guys are going to be hearing a whole lot more from Zakiya right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show real soon as well. So, yes, as well as Candy. So we've got you. Now, I always like to make sure that we represent everybody in the whole family. So tell us, because you've got a whole family there to support Cami as well. So tell us a little bit more about everybody else.
Yeah, so I have a husband. He's an Army veteran. We've been married for...
Shout out, yes, to the Army vet. Okay.
Yes, yes. We've been married for 10 years. We have a 18-year-old son off in college. We have a 14-year-old son who's dabbling in writing a little bit. We'll see what comes of that.
Oh, okay. And writing, like, books as well, or means like lyrics and songs and things like that, or poetry?
So he wrote a book, and he did a workbook this summer through his the writing camp. And he's like, Mommy, I don't know. You know, he's 14, so he's a teenager now. So
he's
so comfortable with release.
Right. Well, I love all of this. That is so nice. Well, this is why, you know, to me, it's a whole family of creatives. You know, I've heard what the buddy says. Everybody's got, that's awesome. So good stuff. Okay, well, you got it together, Zakiya.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it together. And I love hearing this. I really do. So we are just, you know, just a big old welcome. And I want to take a moment. You're going to be working closely with us at the Hair Radio Morning Show. They're going to be hearing a lot more. You've got, Cami's got a whole commercial coming soon on the show. You will be with us and helping to just, you know, move everything forward. And one of our therapy experts in all that we're doing. So just welcome. We give you a big old Hair Radio Morning Show welcome. And that's
so
on
much.
Behalf of myself and, of course, Nicole Marie and Michael Hopkins and Blue and the entire crew. So a big old welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You've got it.
For more to come.
Okay. Yeah, we feel the same way. All right. Thank you so much. Okay, folks, we'll be right back. Zakiya, thank you, and thank Cami. Thank you guys so very much.
You're welcome.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
I think with all of the conversations that I've had probably in the last year, Carrie, and of course, you know, we've had our industry hair, beauty, and skin, and, you know, ethnic beauty has taken a hard hit. So I think one of the most important projects to me is to tell my story of just how I grew up in black hair care. At the beginning of the boom, the billion-dollar economic industrial revolution of what we call the curl, even though we were coming out of pressing curls and going into the afro. So that's one of the things I'm working on is a documentary of my life and how I grew up in black hair care. And some of the people, it's funny, you know, because people would always say, you know, we had all this wealth and black dynasties and generating black wealth, but where did the kids go? You know, where did the
exactly.
money go? Where did that whole wealth gap, where is it? And so I feel, you know, a sense of responsibility to at least tell it from my perspective. So that it's almost like that all that wealth kind of like evaporated. And so,
well, that's what I'm going to ask you. Yeah, where did the money go? Where? That's the question,
yeah.
The million-dollar question here, literally.
Yeah.
We're talking about
yeah.
generations
you know,
of hair industry
yeah.
superstar folks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, so
it's a complex conversation because you can't talk about where the wealth went until you talk about there's a conversation that I do address called gerontocracy. And gerontocracy is
wow.
when the passing doesn't happen. And your predecessors stay too long. And they stay too long because they're not adapting. And we always talk about how companies should adapt to the, you know,
right.
you adapt inside before you see signs of the changing of the trend or changing of the times. And so there's a thing that, and when you get into the 70s and 80s, most of those companies were ran by men, black men. And so black men tend to look at their children differently.
Watch it, Cheryl Morrow. No,
black women. You know, no, they do. And it's, let's just say, you know, you have your John Johnson. You have your George Johnson. You have your Mr. Dudleys. You have your
right.
Mr. Morrows. You have your Mr. Bronners. You have the World of Curls and the Donnies and the Leisure Curls. You had these men. And so they did have children.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right.
you know, the limelight
right.
is addictive. The limelight is addictive. And they just don't see the continuity of their legacies through their children. It sounds like a good thing. They know they should do it, but they don't do it. You know, and so there's a cultural thing. And then when you have the Eunice Johnsons and the Celia DeVore, and you have Dr. Katie Wickhams, and you have this when you have women. They tend to let go a little easier. So those legacies can continue. But there is just like a real cultural thing. And then I get into the documentary because it's real talk.
Mm.
You know, this is not just
wow.
us wanting to pass wealth. It's not us wanting to just close wealth gaps. You can't close wealth gaps if you don't have a continuity of the predecessor into the succession plan, which is your children.
I agree.
You can't close
a
gap because the gap keeps getting wider because white America keeps passing it on and locking it within their
mm.
culture. We don't.
Mm.
It's a cultural thing.
We don't
I get
really,
into that.
It's a different
thing. Yeah. Yeah, we don't get it.
Well, let me
yeah.
ask you about
we
that
think,
a little bit, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that
yeah.
because, you know, I mean, on a simplistic term, in a
mm-hmm.
very simple way. I talk to a lot of hairstylists, you know, throughout the years, and I always ask them about, you know, they open up the shops, and I very basic. I say, well, what about your kids, you know, or they helping you or working at the shops and, you know, and this and that. And they cannot get those kids to help them at the shops. The kids generally take it for granted. You know, they've got all the money that comes from, the parents' hard work at these salons and barbershops, and they just go on and living a very, great life from the benefits of the financial aspect, but they do nothing to support the parents' hard work, and they truly are not going to be heading up any kind of, taking on a business. That's just not even on the table. And I always wondered about that. And I kind of think about it for my own company. So this is something that is very, very important. And it's a big disparity between the African-American community with regards to succession, I call it, and the and the people who are outside of our community. So this is really something that is very interesting to me. And I know you're on a different level with it, but it just, I don't understand. Is it just, just something that the kids don't, you know, should we expect them to want to, you know, pass, you know, to continue on in their, with their parents' legacy? You know, is this something?
Yeah, think about it, Gary. I didn't want to be a barber. My father started out as a barber.
Right.
The key here is that Mr. Marl created a company. Now, think about it. Most hair, you know, because I'm a hairstylist. I get it.
Yeah.
The problem is that their hairstyling portion of their business is not a company. So there is no room to do other things besides maybe promotions or marketing of the, the parents' actual skill sets, which is doing hair. Where else is there other means of doing something else if the child or if the offspring is not doesn't want to do hair? And just think of this analogy, and I always tell them when I get this question, you know, would I really want to inherit a cotton picking business? You know, black people pick cotton.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, would I want to pass that on? You know, so the physical portions of, you know, businesses are not companies. Businesses is one thing, and a company is another. So in a company is encased, which I always tell people, I'm an intrapreneur. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't need to make anything. I don't need to discover anything. I don't need to do any of that. What I need to do is to come in with something already formed and take it to the next level. So because my father
had
a company, right, he had a company which had, you know, roots, and then it springed out with branches and leaves. So there was so many branches to him because they and just take the Johnson daughter, you know, with Ebony and Jet. Because Ebony and Jet and was really actually a beauty business. They were Duke and Ravine, this relaxer, and Duke was a men's line. There were so many other things to do within Johnson Publishing. So it was an actual company.
Right.
So that tends to allow the successor to kind of fit in and take the reins. But if you are just a business, which hair salons are, and it's tied to the parents' physical skills, you really have a very difficult time with that, with the succession plan.
Well, now you are talking about in this, in your upcoming documentary, we're talking about some of the biggest names in the hair industry. And so I'm just, one of the things that jumps out at me, have you heard any feedback from some of those, you know, some of those families, some of those super well-known hair industry superstar families? Have you gotten any feedback
yet? They've evaporated.
What are their thoughts?
Well, the problem, when you are acquired by big companies like Procter & Gamble or L'Oreal, and you evaporate. Yeah, you there is nothing to, unless you stay on as a consultant or something of that nature. But no,
and that doesn't
usually
last too long. Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl Morrow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. I'm looking forward to this documentary.
I was in the studio doing San Diego Monitor News business as a publisher because we now had it at a podcast studio, right? And in the middle of I get a phone call from Chicago or someplace, and they want, you know, 1,000, you know, Willie Morrow blow dry novels. It's just that, you know, here I go, I'm in the newspaper, but I get calls about something that was created over 45 years ago, and it's still the number one heat tool on Amazon. That is succession.
Well,
so I have to take an order for something in beauty. It's an amazing thing. Because that's a company.
I absolutely want to remind everybody about the amazing legacy and lineage that you have. So we're talking about the Morrow family dynasty. So I'm in the hair business, and your father, as you just mentioned, that starting with the novel, tell us a little bit about his invention, because that really, that hit the mark out there and made him pretty much a household name in the hair industry, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, just combs, period. I think that in those 60s, 1964, bringing to commercial market is the brilliance of Mr. Morrow. Not the fact that creating or duplicating something that had already been done in the continent of Africa. So the comb in and of itself is not the invention. The invention is to be able to put it in industrial commerce to make it available. Because if you didn't go to the continent of Africa in 1963, 1964, you wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So the ability for him to take it, to redesign it, patent it, take it to the U.S. Congress, put it into commerce, and to commercialize it, monetize it, right, and productize it.
Yes.
And make it available for black people in the West Indies, black people in North America, black people in in Europe, and black people in Asia, black people in Africa too. They didn't know it was a thing, you know. So we could fashion and style our hair and be a part of the secular world. So the Afrocomb was put in the secular world by Mr. Morrow, by redesigning it and industrializing it. It's the same process as taking tobacco. Yeah, tobacco is natural in its environment, but to make it be consumed and then enrich yourself by that great legacy called an Afrocomb, and then making other people have it in Cuba and in Hawaii and in other places. So that was the brilliance. And then to create this generation, and then you have the first one, and then the next generation of them, and then to have utility patents, and then go into, you know, making a comb and a blow dry so we can have blowouts, straighten hair, and things of that nature. That was, I think, the difference between a Mr. Morrow, a Joe Dudley, a gardener, a machine, a different angle. To being part of the legacy of ethnic beauty.
Absolutely. And I just want to also bring attention to that documentary, because to me, 400 Years Without a Comb was so far ahead. Now, documentaries are a lot more, out there. Maybe it has a lot to do with the pandemic that we have come through. But I do want to say that the documentary, documentary really started a lot of the hair industry documentaries, if you will, to me. I think it's one of the most well-known and most seen hair industry documentary in the world. So, and we're talking about 400 Years Without a Comb, and it's still out there, and I'm just loving that. So, again, we're talking about hair legacies and loving it.
It started out as a book. And I think that is probably one of the reasons why it's the hair care, you know, historical Bible that everyone goes to, you know, because it's a three-generation book. In all three decades, Mr. Morrow rewrote it. And then in the last... the fourth quarter of its generation and its edition, he created, and Mr. Morrow just really deals with the culture inside of the plantation, and it starts there, because the commercial market that you and I enjoy was started on the plantation. It formed itself into. And because of that complete disconnection for about three centuries, that disconnection from the world's first organized beauty kind of, you know, that activity, the way we did it, you know, it was not quite done. When Europe went to colonialize Africa, that is where they learned hygiene. The roots of beauty is hygienic, not, you know, fashion and styling and things of that nature. But it was basically really had its roots in hygiene. And I think that this was starting there, only a black person could have done that, Gary. You know, no one cared about,
absolutely,
obviously, how you fashioned,
absolutely,
yourself and cleaned yourself and how you, you know, became this really sophisticated society and culture, and how you, you know, you did things, you know, with your body and your health and well-being. No one was interested in that type of story. So, yeah, once again, Mr. Morrow hit it on the head, you know.
And it didn't stop there. The San Diego Monitor News, I want to talk about that. Can you tell us a little bit, for those who are outside of the California experience, if you will, what exactly is that? And I believe that you go everywhere with it. So tell everybody about it.
We turned from New York. I lived in New York for 19 years. And,
yes,
you know, one of the things that, and this is me, you know, I'm going to tell this story in the documentary. One of the reasons why Mr. Morrow got into publishing is not really because he had a great love for journalism, but black people don't really understand that it's legacy to get a newspaper. All hair care men, all hair care families, it was almost like a rite of passage. You had to get a publication. You know, most people think that John Johnson got the publication and then got into the hair business. No, Johnson was already in beauty. So their mentor, S.B. Fuller, always told them and taught Joe Dudley, George Johnson, which is Ultra Sheen, Johnson Products, and then John Johnson, which was Johnson Publishing. When you start your beauty line, you get you a newspaper. So Mr. Morrow was just following the great recipe and the great formula of success of S.B. Fuller, one of his mentors. So
yes,
all of them got newspapers. So Mr. Morrow got created one in San Diego in 1986 because of the mentor Bill Thompson. In creating, S.B. Fuller always taught them that you create your own advertising tool. So if you get on the cover of somebody else's publication, that was fine. But make sure that you are always, you create a product, you got to have a way to advertise it. So create a magazine in and of itself, put some content. And you see how forward they were, actually? And
oh,
you,
yeah,
think about,
oh,
how,
yeah,
the,
and,
how
and
powerful
that,
content,
yeah,
is today. Yeah.
So, oh, absolutely! They were way ahead.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was opposite. You know, it was to be the power of the advertisement. You know, be ahead. Put yourself on your own cover. Put yourself, you know, look bigger than, you know, you actually are. You know, put your own content out there, your own stories, and then put yourself on the, you know, on the cover, and then put your own ads in. Yeah, so it was always about advertising, the actual,
yeah,
root business. So that's how Mr. Morrow,
exactly,
got into it, and then, of course, and it just rolled into a journalistic product, you know, local business, local people, and things of that nature. And then
which I love,
it's been adjudicated for over almost, you know, we're heading into 40 years, you know. And so I had just taken over, and of course, in 2010, I turned it digital. I saw the handwriting on the wall, and I was the first black paper in the state of California to be adjudicated and digitized at the same time. So I made sure that I created a hybrid. And it was probably because of my technical skills, you know, graphic skills and technical skills and all that stuff I learned while I was in New York. that I can make that turn and that very, very quickly. So,
well, I love the stories that you guys cover. Yeah, yeah. We've got to tell folks,
thank
how
you,
can they get their hands or see? Oh, absolutely. I love when you guys put things out on the internet and, you know, and I see and you do such good work. I love the pictures and the graphics and everything. You're not telling the same stories that everybody else is telling. And that's...
No,
I refuse to. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that our people need orientation and information. Because at the end of the day, we have a saying, if you're not informed, news doesn't matter. You know, if you don't know anything.
Whoa.
You don't know anything.
I have to write that one down. If you're not informed, the news doesn't matter. Wow. That says it all. Wow. Okay. You know, let me bring everybody on up to speed with this. If you're kind of just joining us, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, my very special guest today. She really returns back to us. It's been quite a while. She comes back to the Hair Radio Morning Show. You guys know her. She was out here with us on the East Coast. But she's returned to California, the San Diego area, as we were just talking about, the SDMN, San Diego Monitor newspaper, which we just love, this San Diego Monitor News, I should say. So, Cheryl, how can they get this online? Do you have a place that you can send everybody to find out more, to register?
It's a mobile site, so you can get it on your mobile device. And yeah, you can go to the website, sdmonitornews.com. Our story content is very off the beat. I am very picky what our readers are exposed to. They're always going to get a very avant-garde, a very different way of looking at things. And I'll be honest, I believe that's one of our impediments. We are so 1960s directed. We are so infused in the 1960s that to get, especially African Americans the 60s and 70s, it's very hard to get us back into the present moment of who we are. And
exactly.
I tell them all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. You think about it, African Americans, all 46 million, the average age of an African American in this country is 26 years old.
Isn't that?
And then
dealing with
the African diaspora, they're 19. So if you think about 26 and 19, then that's a lot of time that we've got to look at things differently. We got to look
we
at things very
do.
Very millennial. I think that could be one of our strengths. Thinking
Absolutely.
About things in such a different way to get something. I have also another saying, we want something we've never had. We've got to do something we've never done. We've got to think ways
exactly.
that we've never thought. And
exactly. Well, let me turn to probably I'm going to call it the elephant in the room, and that is the pandemic. Yes, and I know that's a topic and a half. That's we'll probably have to add on 2 or 3 hours to cover this one. But what is your take when you look back? Because right now, as we go to the air with this particular broadcast today, we are more than what they're saying in terms of emerging and all of that. And what can you say looking back? What was the experience like in California and the hair biz part where you were? And California, to me, California is a very different, had a very different approach with all of that. But what's your take? You are living there.
Yeah. Because of the weather, I think we made an adjustment very quickly because we could go outside very quickly. We were always outside, And so I think that they adjusted well. I think African Americans did not adjust well because, of course, and to me, let me just say this, the elephant in the room is not really quite the pandemic from my perspective. The elephant in the room is that the fact that black people are prone to be frightened, much more traumatized than our other racial counterparts. So we don't adjust well. We have the boogeyman. You know, everything's the boogeyman for us. And our people secretly in our silos were saying, oh, stay in. You know, and that is not quite good for business. So if you are naturally afraid, you don't pivot. You're very slow to react. And you can imagine, Carrie, I was very avant-garde and had a different take on it, you know, because after I would probably say March of 2020, it was not a pandemic at that point. It was an epidemic in the United States, an epidemic in Brazil. It wasn't a pandemic at that point. Other world governments had contained it. And so that's, but we keep saying the world.
We were slow to get it under
the world. Like the rest of the world had our issues. No, the rest of the world, the continent of Africa barely is reaching 4,000 deaths. The whole 54 countries.
The whole continent,
That's enormous if you think about it. And there's something quite not right with that. You know, within 50 to 100 to 200 miles, you know, from where we quote unquote say it began. I mean, they have less than maybe 300. And so it wasn't a pandemic long. It was an epidemic. And I think that because our news outlets, and speaking of the San Diego Monitor News, I just refuse to kind of put fuel on the fire and I'm going to say this, you know, I didn't take any COVID money. I refused to because I can't say no, because you can't really stay.
Well, they were throwing it out there.
Yeah, they were.
they were
let me just say this. And I refused to kind of have, and I think I did it once. And you know, Carrie, I just couldn't do it because one of the things, because it doesn't allow you to look at things objectively. And if we're going to have
black news.
And if we're going to be very neutral, you can't be involved in that kind of thing. And let me just say this, as our mother company, which is Beauty, I can afford to do that. And I understand that most papers needed that money to, you know, say, hey, and because I was digitized prior to 10 years ago, I pivoted very quickly to digital and still maintained my other advertisers. So, you know, 2020 was not, it did not affect me. Not economically.
That is amazing. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because
and
the,
so,
the census was going on at the same time. So that was very surprising.
Yeah, that's true.
Which
changed the game here in New York for us to a degree. I have to say, though, and looking out, so what are some of the, you know, when you look at the beauty industry, you know, how, in your opinion, has it affected the folks in the beauty industry? I mean, especially, like you said, in California, though, see, you guys were, remind me of Georgia, right after this pandemic was kind of declared, right? Georgia was like, okay, we're like literally about 2 weeks later. We're all again, everybody. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
I remember having panel discussions on our broadcast here on the Hair Radio Morning Show in the year 2020. It was just strange, a very strange dynamic in different states.
Yeah.
And so the industry was very different, and then with and we've had the people from Barbicide and all these other folks on, and they scared the bejesus out of us with the discourse on television news, as you were kind of saying. It's almost surreal. So so when you look at the beauty industry, will we make it? What do you think, Sarah?
Well, you know, I don't even think it's that the salon. I think that we could have pivoted. That I also was involved in some technology and formulation and dealing with a disinfectant that covers you from all viruses, 9.993. And it protects you for 90 days. You don't even have to sanitize. Once you sanitize your
hands,
you know, you protect it. Yes. We have it in production. It has all of its OSHA and FDA passage. So I answered it in a very technological way. But here's the thing, Carrie. It's not about what's going on in the salon, per se, because black hair care professionalism is wired through the salon. But the industry is wired through the trade show. Once you took the trade show and you could not meet in the grove of 7,000 to 10,000 people, you decimated the ethnic hair care industry because the ethnic hair care industry is wired through the trade show. So now the expo, and now the festival, and now the trade shows, you can't meet. So how do you carry along something that is wired through the actual platforming, hair set, and trade show, and all these big, huge halls and auditoriums.
Exactly.
And things. When you can't meet.
And I'm raising my hand right now.
Right. And, yes, and, right,
it really
and you're
was.
Devastated. Yeah. And so that means that hair, ethnic hair care, because the Garner Brother, as you know, it is over. The international show in New York is over. You can't meet.
Wow.
Those are too many people in one confined space. And now, you know, you're trying to stay 6 feet apart, you know, and you got to, you know, that is a nightmare.
It was a show killer for sure. Yeah.
And so the problem is
gotta
say
that. To you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, please finish your thought. The problem is.
No. So the question and the challenge for black hair care and ethnic beauty is we needed to pivot long before this. And I have been telling show promoters for at least 5 years, pivot to the small conference and the more con kind of business model and create a different kind of gathering to where it's an invited list and it happens more often instead of twice a year.
Exactly.
And so
and
but,
this
you know,
is what I speak to 1,000%.
You know, they're
absolutely right.
Yeah, they act like I didn't, you know, say anything. So, you know, invite the formulators. You know what I mean? Invite, create a TED Talk style. Or there's so many other ways to bring smaller groups. Yeah.
Exactly, and to create those lanes that'll support you and take you through these times. Now, Cheryl, I've got to say, there is one big story that we are revisiting here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. And this, not too long ago, but there was a huge story. Now, I'm telling you, it was the number one cover story, especially in the hair and beauty industry, but it had crossed over into mass media. And this was the story of the Gorilla Glue girl who had put the glue in her hair, the Gorilla Glue. And she was rescued, so to speak, by a California doctor, Dr. Michael Obeng, who was a guest on our very show, on the Hair Radio Morning Show. He spoke to Hair Radio first about this this ordeal for this young woman and how he was able to remedy the situation. But let's start with your take on this, because we're talking about this again as we'll be checking in to see what's new and what's the latest that's going on. It's been a few months. Has her hair grown back? What happened? What's going on? So we will revisit it. But what's your take on this situation? I wish I could have seen your face when you heard this on the news.
You know,
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall.
Yeah, you know it. And you know, I'm always going to be honest with you, Carrie.
Yeah.
And let me just say this, and I am in no way invalidating anybody, The doctor thing was to me was, you know, a little far out there. You know, it's so funny because the glue, and here we go again, and this is me sticking up for my beauty and beauty professionals, because I am a hairstylist. For that particular act connected with a doctor, to me, you know, because at the end of the day, the glue in and of itself is not a medication. That's number one. Number two, it's not, it's in the store where a common person can purchase it. And for not a beauty professional to not be able to help her, and I won't even say be able to help her, right? Because what the medical professional used to unstick the stickiness of the solution, anybody could have done that. Because what he used to do that. Now, will you save the hair from the high content of what the effects because of that particular chemical that in that glue did it? You know, because we have to ask what was on the hair first. Was it relaxed?
Exactly.
Was it natural? You know, at the end of the day, so. And to me, because it probably was not really on her scalp, that the scalp hair is probably the hair that is going to obviously be the healthiest. I already know in terms of, you know, of course, we don't necessarily talk about it all the time, but I'm the only cosmetic trichologist in the world that deals with cosmetology-based hair loss on afro textures. But you know, eventually that hair is going to be cut away from her body. Yeah. It's not going to be.
Wow.
Wow. So,
Cheryl,
you know, I don't know. I don't know how much help he was. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, he,
I'm a little in the middle. Yeah, I'm a little in the middle with the doctor angle, you know, because eventually.
Well, you've got to be back on the show when he's here. So, because I would love for you to break it all down with Dr. Oving, who just seems like a nice gentleman and all. But, you know, there's a whole lot more to this story. There is. There's a great deal of this story. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And
I'm
just grateful that we were in the middle of it somewhere. I'm just grateful
at the end of the day, you have to cover it. You know, if nothing is black, you know, black news and ethnic beauty news, that story was a prime example of it. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I am honored. Again, we've been chatting with the amazing Cheryl Morrow. Hair royalty, you've been declared and named that for decades. We've been calling it that, hair royalty, right here on our broadcast today. I appreciate you taking on it. I've always wanted to you know, when I hear some of these big stories and some of these big things, I always say, what in the world would Cheryl Morrow say? Really, what would you say about it? Because you always have an interesting
The moment I saw that, you know, because you know the moment I saw it, I was like, oh, God, here we go again. You know, why didn't you just end up at a salon? How did we get to the doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like really weird, you know. But anyway.
Yes. Well, it's about education, and that's where you come in. Education. And what was that line earlier? If you're not informed, then the news don't matter.
Well, if you're not informed, news doesn't matter. Yeah, you can't gossip with anybody who's not really informed about what they're gossiping about. You know, you can't gossip.
I love
it. You know.
I love it.
That's it.
I totally agree. Well, Cheryl Morrow, now what's next for you? What's next for you?
I think that I am going to probably be peeling away from the publisher kind of role at San Diego Monarchy News. The George Floyd thing kind of took me out. I think I wanted to be at the helm during that incident and the 1 year anniversary and, you know, all of these things.
Well, were
and
you one of those
coming
who
up.
Were you against the use of the word anniversary? I didn't understand that because anniversary means, you know, just that. It doesn't indicate or mean that it was, you know, party on a table per se. But I saw a lot of stuff online that said, oh, don't call it an anniversary. No media company call it an anniversary. It's not a celebration. So I said, well, I understand what I think what the person meant or their sentiment, but I don't think that I don't see what the harm of the word itself, anniversary. How do you weigh in, being a media company, Ms. Publisher of the San Diego Monitor News?
Oh,
how
boy.
Do you weigh in on that?
Well, you know, the wonderful thing that I got a call one day, and it was the first cousin of Mr. Floyd. Mm. Their mother are sisters, and he is stationed here in San Diego. And he grew up with him. And
wow.
After, you know, experiencing that whole thing, you know, it really, you know, that is tomato, tomato, you know, anniversary, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
know what, it, you know, it,
yeah.
it, what happened.
We
and,
know what it really means. Exactly.
You know, well, we get caught up in things of that nature. And I think that once we deal with our trauma about it, then we can clearly talk about preventing it. And that is very hard to get. And that's why I don't join a lot of black news outlets. I'm just,
the chatter,
you know, we're just
and
different.
All that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just different
yeah.
because at the end
yeah.
of the day, on this end of the world, we have a wonderful civil rights activist and founder of the People Alliance for Justice Advocates. His name is Reverend Shane Harris. You know, he's approaching it in terms of preventing and plucking out the next Derek Chauvin. It's not, you know, yours is one focus that people can focus on, but at the end of the day, we're not plucking out. I mean, he had 7 to 8 excessive forces on his record already, 19 years. Why didn't we understand that this guy was a problem? You know, so
exactly.
let's just focus
exactly.
on, so on our side of the world, we're choosing to think tank and focus on better policy in that regard from the incident. And my experience with Mr. Gary Jones, which is a cousin, he's in the military as well, you know, San Diego, that is, we're known for that. I think that, you know, it's you know, we can ring the bell, but, you know, if you listen to the recording, you know, it's, he's going to jail for fraud, which means that they were executioner, judge, and jury. Even just
yeah.
arriving on the scene. So we want to prevent
right.
that because there's something that happens before excessive force, and there is a disregard of the Constitution, and that is the problem. This is a problem when they approach you that you are outside of the rules. Why is, you know, I tell Black Lives Matter and the whole people, Black lives don't matter, won't matter until Black life matters. And so that
ooh,
is what
okay.
happened before the incident.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once that happens,
wow.
that will, then when Black life matters, the way we, who we are in and of ourselves, when that matters to you, like it matters to you, you know, like your life and white life, Italian life, in you know, when life matters, the way people live and how they move, their morals and their ethics and their ethos.
Well,
that
Cheryl,
matters,
we have.
Then we will.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we have about 60 seconds. I wanted to just to thank you. And is there anybody that you'd like to shout out to or pass along some well thoughts before we close out this morning?
Oh, just the whole ethnic beauty world. I think that we're all in it together, and we're going to make
yeah.
a change, bring some technology and innovation, and work with Carrie to
yes, please
create this whole new gathering, this whole new way of doing things and expound on the legacies of the pioneers. Absolutely. I'm excited, Carrie.
Absolutely. Me too. I am. Well, as you've heard, we've been chatting today with the one and only Ms. Cheryl Morrow. Again, and I love that you've talked about the hair industry. I think that you brought a lot to that, you know, in making, informing the folks out there and creating your own discourse. Again, the San Diego Monitor News, you are a publisher. You're the daughter of Willie Morrow, 400 Years Without a Comb, and so much more he's accomplished. And you are continuing that legacy. So you talk about the generations, the subsequent generations, and where the money, where's the money? Well, I think we found it to this morning.
Yeah.
Roots Rock Salon. Healthy roots, healthy hair. Our expert stylists will help you shine naturally beautiful. We offer everything from hydrating shampoo, conditioning hair mask, oil steam treatments to lock in the cuticle, and an array of natural styles and programs to promote healthy hair growth using professional products. Book your consultation today online at RootsRockSalon.com. Visit us at 72 Harrison Avenue, West Orange, New Jersey, or call us at 973-957-7800.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, everybody, it is mid-show. About to say happy mid-show. It's Tuesday, September 20th of 2022. It's our show number 759. Let's let that sink in for a moment. 759 shows as we march towards the 1,000 mark. Coming soon. Hey, Nicole Marie will be back tomorrow, and we bumped up one of your favorite hosts here. We're talking about all the way from Spotsylvania, Virginia. You guys know him. He's going to be hosting the Vet Talk radio show at about 8:30 this morning, East Coast time, 7:30 Central, right here. So we're going to talk to him about all of that and so much more. It's my great honor to welcome in the host chat hour. The first part of that host chat hour, mid-show, the one and only Michael Hopkins. Good morning. Good morning. Happy mid-show, Michael.
Good morning, Carrie Hines. And yes, it is. It is another fantastic mid-show. It
certainly is. Well, I've been listening. And the show, I thought it moved along really well. And I've got to say, we kicked off the show this morning for those of you who might have missed it. And Nicole Marie had been talking about this in the last couple of days or so, last couple of shows, about this whole thing with Cheryl Lee Ralph. And I don't know if you heard her singing at the mic, Michael, when she was collecting her award. But we opened our show with that clip today. And hold on, I think I have it right here. Let's see if we can get it on. Now, it's not the best, but I think you'll get the feeling. And Michael, we'll talk on the other side of this. This is Shirley Ralph, Broadway fame. She also was in the TV show Brandy. It was actually Moesha. Let me give it the right name.
Moesha. Yep.
Yeah, it starred Brandy, but it was with Moesha. So let's see. Now this is Shirley Ralph. So we're going to find that and get that on. All right, here, take a listen. It's less than 30 seconds. So take a listen. Let's talk about it, Michael.
I am an endangered species, but I sing no victim song. I am a woman, I am an artist, and I know
all right. Michael, did you hear that from Shirley Ralph?
Oh, most definitely.
What goes through your mind when you hear something that's so black?
You know what it reminds me of, Carrie Hines?
What's that? Reminds me
of back in the 60s, it reminds me of Mahalia Jackson.
That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, and that is going way, way back. But that's what it reminds me of.
I just remember my mama playing Mahalia Jackson. I think it was Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Yeah, Go Tell It on the Mountain.
That's the only thing I remember. Yeah. But Mahalia is a legend in our community. She absolutely was. And I think they just made a movie and all that stuff. But it does kind of put you in mind, in that mindset. What is amazing is that if Shirley Ralph did not take that chance on the stage, to sing at her own, peril, we would have never heard it. If they never take the time to put stuff that is beneficial that we want to hear. So this is the only time you get to do stuff like that. And look at the rousing applause and the response I'm still talking about it over a week later.
Oh, yeah, she rocked the house.
She rocked the house, Michael, and that's a great way to put it. And it's a shame that she's had to wait for so long before getting her flowers.
Right. And she wouldn't have been given them then, hardly.
What on earth is this country thinking? It's just awful. So I'm glad, not to take anything away from her, I'm glad she sang it.
Herbie, I gotta let everybody know.
Pardon me, Michael. I'm not feeling my greatest today, but I didn't want to take off. So I probably will just get up some pieces on so I can kind of rest and relax a little bit. But I wanted to be here for you guys today. So, Michael, coming up at about 8:30, Michael, we have got to talk about veterans, the Let's Talk Radio Show. So can you give us a little bit? Now, today's it's season two that most of you guys know that Michael's hosting. It's the second episode, though. And there's something special. There's a little something different about this show. Can you talk a little bit about it, Michael, for the audience?
Oh, just a little bit, Carrie. We're just going in, and there were things that we did in the first season that we just want to go back and visit and go back and enhance and just
I kind of took a sneak peek. So what you've worked on is really the top five topics that you've covered in the first season. and you're kind of going over that and starting to kind of rehash it. So there are folks who, so many folks that you heard from, some, you know, might have missed certain aspects of what you wanted to say. Have been, you said something really important a couple of days ago. You said, you know, there have been changes and updates and all of that. So we've got to be on top of that. And believe me, Michael Hopkins is your man for any claims issues for the veterans. And even if you're not a veteran, stay tuned. You're going to learn something that can help your neighbor.
Right, and that's the beautiful thing about it, Carrie. You don't have to be a veteran. That's a beautiful thing that I love about what we do. You don't have to be a veteran. I have other people that I talk to. They're not veterans. They may have a family member, a husband, wife, that's a veteran. And the great thing about it, Carrie, they are starting to understand how that family member feels and what they're going through, because before they had no idea. They just thought they had a problem. Nobody knows what the problem is. So therefore, it's just, okay, this is what we'll do. We'll leave the problem alone and it'll go away. Well, it doesn't go away. And it won't go away. But what we do here with Vet Talk Radio Show is that we address those issues, and that's what I love about it. It has gotten us as Vet Talk Radio Show, we're just up there with a lot of the other veterans shows.
I think better.
Right.
No offense to any of our grid broadcasting, podcasting colleagues. I love the way that your show is so unique. It doesn't sound like the other radio shows. It does not sound like other podcasts. And that means something, and it resonates with your fans. So let me just be the first to say that, Michael. You're very kind and considerate, but let me speak it the way it is. So I want to turn, yeah, absolutely. I also want to take a moment. We'd be remiss if we don't acknowledge the funeral yesterday. It was Queen Elizabeth II. Yesterday, she was laid to rest. So what in England? So what do you say, Michael? What do you say? Did you watch any of the coverage on TV?
Oh, yes, I did, Carrie. And the thing I loved about it is that military pomp and ceremony that all of us, Carrie, it doesn't even matter what military service you're in as far as around the world.
Right. Pomp didn't the boys, Diana's son, serve in those kind of things over there?
Yes,
right.
Yes, they did. Yeah. And the thing about it that I love about their monarchy, it's to serve in the military is just like it's a
that's a high honor.
I can't call it a thing, but it's more like duty. It is a duty for the royal.
It's a very high honor.
Right.
And they're expected, even though they're royal.
Right. The guys will go to Sandhurst, and that's like the equivalent of the Naval Academy, the Air Force. Right. They go and they do their 4 years of training, and then they go out and serve just like
I was just blown away. I love how they really gave of themselves. They're just, whatever Princess Diana did, she really poured some greatness into those boys.
Right. She really did. And you know, Carrie, believe it or not, Queen Elizabeth II actually served in World War II. She was actually part of in the military,
you
in
know,
the army.
She was
actually
really Wonder Woman, was she not?
Oh yeah,
God.
You know they used to call her the Princess Mechanic. That's what they used to call her.
See, yeah, I've never in my life seen somebody so incredibly gifted at so many different things and just so talented at leadership.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And so it's made an impression on us.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, it did. It did show, you know, the British, the monarchy. And if you notice, every time you see them in any type of pictures, they were always, as we would call them in the military, they were always dressed right, dressed. Always. You never saw her with a bad hair day or the clothes didn't look right or they were wrinkled. They always, and they instilled that with their children. It sort of like reminds me of what Cheryl Morrow was talking about legacy.
Okay, now for those of you just tuning in, earlier we had on another Cheryl. She is the daughter of legendary icon, Dr. Willie Morrow, who just recently we lost in a big loss in the way of hair and beauty. And so Cheryl has been kind of holding down the reins out there in San Diego. And the piece that we ran today was it was a playback. It was about generations of wealth that have they been carrying on the generations, you know, passing down the great wealth from some of these beauty families. So, well, that's a great question. So, but yeah, Cheryl is great. So if you've missed it, at 9 o'clock, we're going to get it over to the UpscaleMagazineRadio.com. Shouting out everybody over there. We love Upscale Magazine and the UpscaleMagazineRadio.com website, which the station plays around the clock. Just, I just wanted to mention it, Michael, 24/7. And you can catch the replays and some great hair radio playbacks over there as well, in addition to other things. So,
oh, yeah.
So you were saying about Cheryl.
Oh, yes. Yes, as you said on the show, but she is, to me, she is just so powerful. I just get mesmerized just listening to her because of what the things that she says. She gets you to think. She covers history, building a business. I mean, you know, you just get, meaning me, I get so much just listening to her. And a lot of the things she says, I'm going to implement in my business. I'm going to implement.
That says a lot. So
right.
Listen, guys, if you're just joining us, I'm Kerry Hines. I'm in Brooklyn, New York. Of course, my voice is a little rough this morning, a little raspy, but I didn't want to take off. I'm going to rest after today's show and listen to the UpscaleMagazineRadio.com at 9 o'clock New York time and kind of just fall back a little bit and carry on. But let me tell you, I'm super excited. We've got a lot more on the way. And let me also mention this. On Wednesday show, of course, we have a surprise hairstylist who will be joining us at 8:30 Eastern. And earlier than that, I'm so happy to have back this incredible lady. You haven't heard from her in a while. Her name is Jack Rabbit Eats, and she is all about plant-based cooking. So she's going to be with us between 8 and 8:30. And then we move on over to our hairstylist of the week, literally. And so much more to get to. I'm so excited. So just a lot to talk about. And right now, we've got Blue standing by down in Jacksonville, Florida. You guys know her. She runs Divine Energy Candles. And let's just get her on the line. Blue, good morning. And happy mid-show.
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning.
Yeah.
Morning.
Good morning. How are you?
How is everyone doing today?
We're doing fine. Nicole Marie's off today, so you got it. You're hanging out with Michael and Kara Hines and all our
hey,
fans,
Nicole,
of course.
Anyway, hey, Michael, and hello,
yeah.
Carrie. How's everyone
hey.
Today? It's Tuesday.
Yeah,
happy Tuesday.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I'm so excited. Tuesday is always great for us. And just to remind you guys out there, you know, Mondays, it's like Tuesday is like our Monday because we have a three-day weekend from the live show. So you guys know that we're only live Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you have to go over to the upscalemagazineradio.com to listen. And you can catch us anytime around the clock. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm listening to upscalemagazineradio.com. So you can tune in anytime. And you'll catch a lot of great things. We have great playbacks from the Hair Radio Show. We have other interviews that are exclusive to the Upscale folks. So do check them out when you get a chance. I'm super happy about that. And there's more to come about all of that. So, you know, real happy. Yeah. Now, I've got to tell you, it's time for the scent of the day. So, Blue, yes. What have you been working?
I have been working on something pretty delicious for this Tuesday. And I know it's a favorite of a lot of – it's a big seller for me, and it's a favorite to us all. It's banana nut bread.
Oh,
banana nut
bread. Oh.
Our nostalgic banana nut bread fragrance captures the mouth-watery bakery aroma of a homemade classic. Top notes of toasted walnuts and a ripe banana combined with nutmeg and sugar for a blend that's perfectly nutty and sweet. Vanilla and a cake base notes enrich the sweetness in this toasty scent. Capture the aroma of a freshly baked banana nut bread still warm from the oven in your handmade candle.
Wow. I'm just thinking that when people come into your house after you've been, you know, kind of burning this banana nut bread by Divine Energy candles, they're going to smell that smell. And they might be go make a beeline straight for your kitchen.
Look, true story, I'm in there making these candles. And my son comes from the back and said, Mom, you baking? I said, oh, my I said, that's this banana nut bread. I said, if it reached you in your bedroom, then we are doing good up in here in this kitchen.
You're doing great with that. That is really true. I'm so excited.
Let's get with the top notes. Let's get with our top notes for this banana nut bread. We have banana and lemon peel with walnuts. Our middle note is sugar and nutmeg. And our base note is tonka bean, butter, and vanilla.
Wow. Just amazing.
I know how you got the top, middle, and base
notes,
Carrie.
What was that, Blue?
Huh? I said, I know how you like your top notes, your middle note, and your base note.
And just, Blue, remind everybody what we're talking about with the top notes and all of that.
We are describing when you first get your candles, what hits your senses first, which will be your top note. You'll get that banana note and that lemon and walnut really, really quick. And as you keep smelling, or maybe when you start burning, you'll get your middle notes, which is the sugar and nutmeg.
Exactly.
And I've noticed that nutmeg comes through just as quick as the banana and the walnut. So I would probably add that nutmeg as the top note too. But, you know, and your tonka bean, butter, and vanilla is the base. That's usually on the bottom. Middle note is in the middle, and the top note is on the top. And they come together and make a beautiful, beautiful banana nut bread scented candle.
Exactly. And what I love about this is that, you know, don't forget that you can use these candles at home or in your shop. So, and that's important.
Your office. Your office, anywhere, on vacation.
Exactly. But when those customers come in, and instead of smelling that stuff sometimes, you know what I'm talking about, put on some of these Divine Energy candles. I think it'll be well worth it, especially when you're talking about banana nut bread. So, that's a great one. And just to remind everybody, each Friday, we're going to backtrack. So you don't want to miss Friday's sit down with Blue and Divine Energy candles, right? Because she goes over all of this and kind of names a few others. I cannot wait. Now, there was some that you mentioned because we have some holidays coming up, and I think we should touch on that today.
Yes.
What do you have in store for the holidays?
In store for the holidays, I have, I mentioned it last week, I believe, about our candy corns, because there's an event coming up here. So we got some candy corn, and we got a few caramelized popcorn. Caramelized popcorn, caramel popcorn candles that we are preparing for these events. And what else we have good going on? Maybe some sugared chestnuts. Yeah, we got some good stuff getting ready for this next event.
It sounds absolutely amazing. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that, you got Thanksgiving. And
oh, God,
then
Thanksgiving is super fun.
Mm-hmm. That's big because you've got the family. You know, they're all kind of folks. So my suggestion
they
is here's
cranberry
something
around that time. They love cranberry around Thanksgiving. That's a really, really popular scent too. Cranberry and your peppermint. Oh yeah. Mhm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pomegranate.
I'm loving it because what you can do in advance is kind of have people give their favorite candle scents as well. So in the
mm-hmm.
preparation for the big holiday, I just think it's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's
just beautiful.
Suggestions. We love new stuff here. So anybody with any suggestions, we are open to all.
All right. So DivineEnergyCandles.com. Again, feel free to go there. It is a great place. She's got a lot of stuff there. So you're going to find a whole lot of different I'm going to say scents. We don't say smells. Scents over there.
Yes.
And real excited. So we're going to be checking in with you, Blue, throughout this time this morning. We're so happy to have you with us. And then
Thank you.
Yes, you got it. We have a lot to get to. Big show today. It's episode 2 for Michael's Vet Talk Radio Show.
Up
at 8:30 this morning, 7:30 Central Time. We've got that to get to. And me, myself, we're going to get on. I'm going to try to get some little stuff here to doctor myself because it's only happy in me. So I'll try to figure out something. And I'll be checking in and out with you guys for the rest of the morning until the Vet Talk Show. But, Michael, I'm excited. So I just want to remind everybody one more time, what is this? This show is going to be the top 5 topics. And these are some of your favorites, right?
Right. Oh, yes. Most definitely. These are some of my favorites.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear all this, and I just can't wait. So what I'm going to do is get on one of our pieces that'll carry us on through so I can kind of pull it together for you guys for the rest of the show today. So I just want to thank you, and I wanted to definitely be here for you guys. So just stand by. We got a lot more on the way today of the Hair Radio Morning Show. So I'm going to get on Dr. You guys know him. I love to run his pieces here. Dr. Freeman, he's someone who you guys have heard he really is very serious about what he's doing and his commitment to the Black community and to all of these people who have come before with regards to like Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker, all these people who've committed so much. So, let's get on Dr. Freeman, and we'll be back on the other side.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. And I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carrie.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have 8 arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to culture change, reality-based organizational change, and then I do executive success coaching, I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations, and I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity, and then do open registration seminar events for communities, and then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s. And the original is in the British Museum. It was made in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland, not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute, but when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So when I saw it, and I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything, you really do, and you outline it there, you put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this. You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education, and you have, you know, just some great things historical reference. And then my other part, the other part of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection of artifacts and things that, you know, that document the African-American experience or the African experience, I guess, if you were on some level. So, you know, we want you to walk us through just about everything. So, and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship, because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into or through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved, because I understand that you're from Canada, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I left it up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, and I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired
wow.
hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000-6,000 miles on my thumb. Pretty much
wow.
all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life, that really caused me to revisit, you know, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day. And
How old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that
wow.
point.
Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
so then, what are the chaplain, for those of us who don't know, obviously we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like, how does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys, is not there to take but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players, because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids,
wow,
their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, you know, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably well, I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you and kind of push you forward with getting to have a deeper understanding. So what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is of course, you can imagine, when I was 25 years of age when this happened, and my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, "You mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me." And so it was earning their respect. But I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to, and the sincerity of my heart, by asking questions. And it's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward. That was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world, so I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male growing up, and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself, about history, and it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time. And I just would get these, what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those.
And so I'd bring home a video, let's say, a series called Africa, A Voyage of Discovery by Basil Davidson. Is a BBC series, a man from Great Britain. And then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, part one, part two. The Promised Land, about the move from the south to the, especially the Chicagoland area. And I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima. And I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it. I'd ask all kinds of questions, and he let me to ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009. And I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So that kind of was the genesis to... And then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection. And Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection, the impact it had. It is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice, and plus they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library have done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff. Also, Secret Service, 4 years in a row, FBI, just fascinating stuff that
wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors, and I find that especially when I'm speaking about diversity or Black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's motivating him? And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. At white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, you know, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had, like, the shackles, if you will, for, like, that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you. In addition to so many other different things, what are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana at the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica, and I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. And he brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me. And I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shekels they have available, and for them to do that, I just feel so respected by these the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Steve and Danica. And so the other pieces, I've tried to do, Carrie, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand, to cross that no man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I've tried to bring more of an international view. And because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America, in fact there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa, and many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it, but it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish, so that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the Old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went, St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also what I've tried to do with the collection is I tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific and nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who have been under the boot of slavery and the trade. And,
and what have you found, Jim Crow for the most laws. Part? Right.
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube, Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. And the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging from lynching, the black code laws, and the depression where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature what people endured. But then we talk about the blades of grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer. Because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, man, I think I've got problems. Here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally. Stuff like, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud, if people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being. And at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short. I'm too fat. I'm too skinny. I'm too tall. I'm too this. I'm too that. My ears are too big. My ears are too small. My hair is not enough. You know, all that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that to me is, I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Andy Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, mm-hmm. her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who, the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And then I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the Internet, I guess I should ask?
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
right
now...
Right, if I were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. Wow. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where can you find one? You know, someone might say, well, I've got everything. No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
No, that's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or, you know, you name the names mm-hmm. Out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who I just, we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share, putting it out there, and it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Andy Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure.
Right. But
it's, now it's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that
yes.
that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book, especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, you're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African-American men, you just put it in a book, right? That's what they're telling us.
Oh,
and they said, you're wasting your time.
That.
You got to use more visual, music, whatever, other means and methodologies to reach your target audience. But we kept on going with it, and I'll tell you,
which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging message we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is, you can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book and who are you and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us from some interviews from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age. Knowing remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, it really, that question changed the tone. Because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving, we've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology and I think in that direction, began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence. That all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual, suddenly it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression, to just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy, while I'm moving from one part to the next, and never to be revisited. But a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go. In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy. In Great Britain, just the sound of your speech, if you're from Yorkshire or Scotland, and you're talking with someone who's from London, you know, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it, you know, personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now. And I was speaking at their Martin Luther King event. And I talked about the moment, and I talked about the grieving process. And there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me his story, he said, you know, he says, when I experienced the moment, when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. And he was no more than about 6, 7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind to get a name. And he said that what happened is that I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says, later on, he says, I rose very pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there, and he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. Now, remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About 3-4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit, and he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye, and as serious as a heart attack, he said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Kerry, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard what he said to me. And I thought, I got in the car. I mean, we're I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray. I began to talk to God. I said, I never want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize and repair as best as I can. Now, I think that that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one, people reaching out and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
what's
that.
Cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood with our spouses, with our kids, the next-door neighbors, everybody,
mm-hmm.
and just I think it could have a profound impact on our on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that's,
wow.
that's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days, we had the hibachi grill, and you put
right.
the briquettes in there, and there's only one or two that are hot, and then you kind of bring the other ones that are cold, you bring them up next to the hot ones, and you hope they
wow.
catch fire. And
yeah.
so I just think if we can get just some people that are hot coal,
mm-hmm.
briquette coals, and with this message, and little by little, you know, the whole purpose behind the collection. I hold things lightly. You know, that collection, the whole purpose of the collection is to help create an opening in the hearts for people to hear this message. And
wow.
my book, the books I write, you know, everything is all designed to help open up doors and hearts, minds to these kinds of things, to get out of small-mindedness, to kind of move. We can't deny the pain, but it's kind of like a ratchet wrench. You know, a lot of people view the click, 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 you know, the backwards movement.
Right, right.
Just as that, a backwards movement, backwards movement. But actually, when you think about the purpose of the ratchet wrench to loosen a bolt or tighten a bolt, when you do the click, 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 that's an important part of the whole purpose of the ratchet wrench. What's my point? The point is I think sometimes we just need to take a step back, take a look at our pain. Click, 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 and when it's uncomfortable, turn the music off, turn the external stimulation off, and just confront the pain. And we might have to do it in counseling. We might have to do it reading books. We might have to do it in prayer. In a lot of different ways we deal with the pain, but we all have to do that click, 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 and take the step back. But really, that step back is not a backward step. It's a forward step because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. It's not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come into that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, and then kind of talk about entrepreneurship in just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important? And it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, you know, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot and you say a lot, and there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit, you know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Carrie, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this. But I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values. And I detail that in the workbook called If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking the idea to the marketplace. It's a book about discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club so that people can learn how to deal with objections and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, black history galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com, they can learn more about this model. Because I think the Black History Gallery can become like a town well for a community where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with, let's say, an organization wanting to mentor youth, you know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later, you know, where do you want to be down the road 5-10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5-10 years from now? And, you know, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5-10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now. And we can do that in a very positive way and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say, let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial business together. And I developed a whole magazine project around that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff begins to becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, you know, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for, and so that they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that and how did you know, we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, you know, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet, the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone, about Madam C.J. Walker, but then you might have three or four people saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Right.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
And because she was...
Yes, go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was...
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks, I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to parocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters, Poro, P as in Paul, O as in Ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in Ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college, .com. And they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, yeah, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years.
Up now, live, it's Vet Talk Radio Show with host Michael Hopkins, executive producer Carrie Hines, and Michael's Angels panel, Nicole, Noor, and Katrina. The Vet Talk Radio Show with Michael Hopkins is all about helping veterans in need. Stay tuned.
The natural hair care and maintenance training being brought to you by Complete Beauty Solutions, where cosmetology meets healthy naturalism and everything in between. Now offering our half-off introductory special all summer long. So log on to cbeautysolutions.com to sign up. That's C, like complete, then beautysolutions.com. We'll also be on the number one hair radio show, so don't miss out.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, at 8:30 this morning, we're live this morning on this Tuesday, July 20th. I want to bring to the line a gentleman. You guys just heard the introduction. His name is Michael Hopkins, and he is the true host of this program that I'm so excited to usher on in. We're going to have him tell you all about himself, of course. And then we're going to bring in my co-host, Ms. Tara, who's joining us. She'll be joining us on air in just a moment or two. Michael Hopkins, welcome. Good morning. Welcome to the Hair Radio Network, our show, our live show, this Tuesday morning, July 20th of 2021. So how are you?
Oh, good morning, good morning, good morning. I am just great. It is a beautiful morning down here where I live in Virginia. Beautiful morning. And I am looking forward to this.
Yes. Awesome. Well, we love having you here. Now, first of all, you mentioned it. You're in Virginia. But now tell the folks, I don't think it's not the, like, Norfolk area. Where exactly are you?
I am actually in the Fredericksburg area of Virginia, and that's approximately about an hour away from the Washington, D.C. area and an hour away from Richmond. So we're sort of kind of in the middle. It's a little bit of small-town America and a little bit of modern stuff. So we got a
all right. This is Kerry Hines. It's Tuesday, September 20th of 2022. Just wanted to check in with you live. I'm with Michael Hopkins. Michael, say hi to your Vet Talk Radio fans.
Hello to the Vet Talk Radio fans.
Yeah, we're running an encore presentation. We're here listening with you this morning as we kind of get things together for our next broadcast. And just want to check in with you live. So do keep it right here. Michael and I'll be back with you a little bit towards the end. If you want to ask a question or anything like that or a comment, just press 1 and we'll get to you. So I think we'll have a little bit of fun this morning, do something a little different. So Vet Talk Radio Show, keep it right here, folks. Keep it right here. We're going to go ahead and pick up on this broadcast. It's a replay, as you guys heard. So just stay with us and we'll be checking in throughout the episode. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Actually, I did a total of 21 years.
Wow.
And I finished up my time in 2003. Pretty much right after 9/11, pretty much around in that time frame I finished. So I actually did 21 years in the United States Army. I held various jobs in the United States Army, from Signal Corps to transportation to public affairs, military police officer. That was my last duty assignment. I was assigned to a military police company. That was my last assignment.
Well, Michael, why was it so important for you to start this program, this radio show, to help veterans? Why is that important to you?
Well, you know, Kerry, the reason why it's so important to me is because we have so many veterans here in the United States of America that not only have physical wounds, they have mental wounds. And a lot of these things don't heal. And it was so important to me because I saw the disparity in veterans like myself getting the help and the care that they need throughout the VA system, be it the healthcare system or the compensation system. And a lot of veterans, both male, female, does not matter what branch they're in, we're just not getting the help that we need. And it's unfortunately and regrettably some of the organizations that are tasked to help us, they're getting overrun, as we would call it in the military. They're getting overrun. There are millions of veterans who don't even know that they may be qualified for benefits. And it's just such a travesty to myself personally. And I see so many veterans. It doesn't matter if they're a young veteran or an older veteran. I run into so many veterans, and they have no idea that they have service-connected injuries and illnesses. They have no idea. And that's my function. I feel as though I've been called to duty, so to speak, to help right this wrong as much as I can with as many veterans as I can.
Wow. Well, let me be the first to say it on this broadcast. And on behalf of everybody that is connected with Hair Radio, that is connected with our broadcast, that's listening, I want to thank you for your service to this country. And it means a lot to me and to everybody that I know. And so I really appreciate what you've done. And to take it a step further and to put it together in a program that you brought to me to say, let's do this. And I'm raising my hand right now. I was totally excited, as Michael will tell you, from our first moment. So I want to thank you. And Michael, we're going to have some fun, too. It is about a lot of wonderful information in the future. You're going to be doing subsequent shows, and we're real excited about it. So my advice is to grab a pen and paper whenever Michael starts talking here in the mornings. So we're going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to have information that is helpful and necessary and needed and helping the veterans to navigate their lives. So thanks again, and stay with us. We've got a lot to come coming up right here on this broadcast of Vet Talk Radio, so I'm really, really pleased. I'm going to bring to the line for a quick moment or two. I know she has a question. She's my brand-new co-host since we've last chatted. Now, her name, Michael, is Tara, and Tara comes to us out of the Maryland area. So, Tara, you're on this morning with me and with Michael Hopkins, the new host of Veteran Talk. I know you have Vet Talk, so I know that you have a question. So please, go ahead, lead on in. Tara, everybody.
Yes. Good morning. How are you, Michael? It is such a pleasure to meet you.
No, just great, just great. It is a pleasure to meet another person that's from Maryland. I'm actually from Maryland.
We are neighbors. How
wow.
exciting is that?
Amazing.
I'm excited to meet you. So I actually have two quick questions that I wanted to ask you, Michael. The first question is, and I'm gonna run both of those questions back to back so you can kind of like just answer them however you want to. But the first question I wanted to ask you was, what was the moment that you decided, you know what, there are veterans out here who are suffering, like you said, who need these services? What sparked that? What was the moment, the epitome moment that made you say, you know what, this is my purpose? Because of this situation or what has happened or what I've seen, I need to do this. That's the first question. The second question is, I have a daughter. She's 21. And she just got married to her husband. He is 22. And they just enlisted. Well, he just enlisted into the Army. They got married in December, 2 weeks before he went into the military, did his training for 5 months. They're both from here in Maryland. He was stationed in South Carolina, I believe. There for 5 months, came back and got his new bride, and they shipped them to Kansas. Pray my strength, my babies are gone. And they are young. They are a young married couple. He's enlisted in the Army. She's now an Army wife. What advice would you give young married couples? Because he hasn't had that experience yet. of being out there, dealing with whatever kind of issues and traumas that may arise down the road, but what services can you offer to young people or people who have just enlisted in the Army that can benefit them now in their career?
Oh, okay. And you said that the moment that, like, the epiphany that hit me?
Yes, that made you decide.
Oh, okay. Yeah, back in 2018, when after years and years and years of not applying for compensation for injuries I sustained, I started applying. And I didn't know that much about it and so forth. But what I did do is I started watching YouTube and I started doing research. This was after I got awarded about 20%, and it was for some injuries I sustained in the military. But one thing that happened, I had injuries to my feet, and they deferred it, and I didn't understand what that meant, but the counselor that I talked to explained a little bit to me. And what I did was I put a packet together, and I found 21 pages throughout my military career that I had complained about my feet, and I had issues with my feet. And what happened, I turned that packet in, and I was awarded the highest rating that you could get at that time. It's 50% for bilateral feet issues.
Wow.
And that's when it hit me. I said, wow, so this is how this works. And, and a lot of veterans don't know that the money is tax free money.
Did not know that.
I know you're going to definitely be getting into it, Michael, in the weeks to come. So we are definitely.
Yes.
Now, I know that you wanted to respond. You had another part to that. So it was like advice, I believe you said, Tara.
Right, yes. A young couple going into the military right now, and some things have changed in the military, but if I was them, one of the paths I would get on is money management as a young couple. That's the number one thing as a young couple. They don't have any children, I'm assuming, but
they
money
don't.
Management. No. That's the number one thing when you're in the military and you're low enlisted. Learn how to manage your money.
Okay.
Also, as lower enlisted and he's married, he should get his wife involved in all kinds of programs that they have for enlisted people. There are all kinds of job programs. There's college programs. There are all kinds of things that are offered to people in the military. And while he's active duty and he doesn't know if he's going to stay, he just do his time and get out, or he's going to do 20 years,
he
take
wants to
advantage
make a career.
Of all of these things. Right. If he's going to do that,
that's
take advantage of everything that the military has to offer. There are schools, education, all kinds of things.
Okay.
Well, listen, I just want to say
you,
thank you for this information. Yes, absolutely.
Quite
absolutely. Now, Michael, this amazing show, Vet Talk Radio, this is just the beginning, and I'm loving hearing what I'm hearing. This is the first time I've really ever heard it on radio. I know there are other folks out there doing things, but this is my first time, so I'm super excited. Now, I know for a fact that, Michael, you just don't do this alone. You have three amazing ladies that I've gotten to know since we started on this journey together, and I am so excited. I want to kind of bring them on in. So, Tara, you stay with me now. I'm going to keep your mic on. I'm going to bring in, I call these three ladies Michael's angels. Michael, I think I said that from the very first moment we kind of started on this journey. Like I said, I said I had to get these amazing women on. So I'm going to bring them all on together. We have Noor, we have Nicole, and we have Katrina.
joining me, Carrie Hines, and Tara, and, of course, our program host, Michael Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, angels. Good morning. I feel like Charlie.
Good morning.
I know, right?
Good morning.
Good morning, angels. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
Yay, good
great.
Morning.
How are you?
Great. Doing well.
All right. So first we're going to lead in. I want to introduce the angels. You guys have had a moment or two to meet Michael. You've even gotten to know Tara, Tad here. Let's lead in with Nicole this morning. Nicole, now you are from Mississippi. Tell the folks exactly where you're from. And, you know, if you can just tell us a little sentence or two about yourself.
Okay, well, my name is Nicole Folsom. I currently live in Water Valley, Mississippi, which is definitely small town America. I live in North Mississippi, which is where Water Valley is about 1 hour south of Memphis. And I'm a wife, a mother, an educator, an entrepreneur. I am owner of Folsom Fun Bounce and LP Etiquette by Nicole. I am also a city council member here in my city. So
awesome.
I'm very happy to be joining you today. I'm very happy to be on this vet show with Michael Hopton, my brother, and I just appreciate being a part of your show.
Awesome. Well, we love having
That's
you
great.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay, so stand
Thank
by.
So
we're going to circle back, Ms. Nicole. Also, we are bringing, well, we already have on the line, Noor, who is out of Tennessee. So, Noor, good morning. And now tell everybody about your name. I know you get a ton of questions. You know, fill everybody in on your name and what part of Tennessee.
Okay. Well, my name is actually Noor Jihan Bella Alhaq. I go by Noor for short. It means light of the world, servant of the true God.
Awesome.
It's Arabic, but I am... You know, now a Christian, but I kept my name because of the meaning of it. And I live in Clarksville, Tennessee. I am a motivational speaker, a domestic violence survivor and advocate, also a co-author of a book called Wounded Women Warriors, Surviving the Storms of Life. And I'm also working on my own book right now because I just have to get my story out to share with the world that God, you know, he gives us a second chance. And that's what he gave me. And so by me being able to be a part of this show with Michael Hopkins, it's very much of an honor because I'm always there to serve other people. And so I just want to thank you again for giving us this this opportunity to be a part of this amazing show.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And we will definitely, I remember hearing a little bit about your story before, and we're going to circle back and really bring that to light. So we'll talk as we move along,
okay.
You know that. Also, I want to, you know, introduce one of the other angels. I call her the Farrah Fawcett of the group, Katrina. Good morning, Katrina. Now, what city and state are you in, Katrina?
I am in Paris, Texas. It's like
Paris,
2 hours.
Texas.
Yes, it's a two-hour drive from Dallas. And
okay.
I am a mother, daycare worker, and a home health provider. I also is going to school, finishing up my degree for criminal justice to work with our youth, counseling them no more than me going into selling life insurance and educate a lot of our people about life insurance because a lot of people are very confused about getting life insurance and how it is and how important it is that they need it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm welcome. Welcome to the angels this morning, okay? So I call you Michael's angels. Again, we have Noor out of Clarksville, Tennessee, and Nicole out of Water Valley, Mississippi, and Katrina out of Paris, Texas. I've been to the other Paris. I haven't been to Paris, Texas yet. And, of course, I'm on with my amazing co-star, the host of the program, Mr. Michael Hopkins, and Tara, who's joining me live on the air. So we're live this Tuesday morning on July 20th, the very first broadcast of Vet Talk Radio. Now, Michael, I have to turn back to you and this amazing opportunity to enlighten veterans.
what's one of the biggest things that you might say is the whole thing that needs to be addressed with the veterans? Is there like one big thing that if you could, you know, wave your magic wand and make things right, what's the biggest problem, if you will, or biggest challenge that the veterans face today? Is that, we have a couple minutes, we can kind of elaborate on that. Michael Hopkins.
Oh, sure. One of the biggest challenges that all of us face as veterans is, believe it or not, it's the veteran system. It's the VA system.
Mm.
That is the challenge.
Oh, wow.
Because we go and we do these amazing things as veterans. We serve this country. We put our lives on the line. We get wounded. We get things happen to us. We get back here to what we as veterans refer to as the world. And all of a sudden, for many of us, it's as if we never went anywhere. And we have to basically prove to the VA that our injuries happened while we were on active duty. We have to prove that. And it's very frustrating for the average veteran prove that they were injured while in military service. We assume that the VA knows that that's what happened to us because they sent us. But, you know, you go and you file, and they tell you, well, you know, this didn't happen on active duty. You didn't hurt your back. You didn't twist your knee. You weren't under stress when you were in combat because we can't find it.
Now, how does that make you feel, Michael Hopkins? How did that make you feel when you heard something like that?
Oh, it's lots of things, Kerry. It's anger. It's frustration. It's just disbelief. It's you feel as though you've been let down as an American veteran by the country that you swore to protect, by the people that sent you into harm's way. That's how you feel. You've been betrayed. You've been let down. It's frustrating. That's why you have so many veterans that just give up, and they suffer in silence. That's what happens to a lot of my veteran brothers and sisters. This is an equal opportunity thing. It doesn't matter what branch they were in. It doesn't matter what they did in the military, if they're male or female, race, nationality. None of that matters. What matters is they're veterans, and they should be treated a lot better than they're being treated, and that's my mission.
Everybody
well,
you
has
have started that mission today, Michael Hopkins, right here on our network and through our live broadcast. Folks, again, it's Tuesday, the 20th of July of 2021. You are listening live on this broadcast. It was a little before 9 o'clock, so we're kind of winding on down 9 o'clock Eastern time, and it's coming up on 8 o'clock Central time. And we're about to close out this. I want to just say, and Michael's Angels, I appreciate all of you so much for getting up and being part of this. And as the weeks go on, so next week, we're going to delve all in to some of your stories and really get to know you guys, because you'll be making a very big vocal contribution each week on this very broadcast. And I also want to remind everybody that Michael, this show, Michael, is going to, well, first of all, the entire.
Well, all right.
Michael Hopkins, it's been an incredible rebroadcast of how you got started, how you got with the Vet Talk Radio Show. It is Tuesday morning, September 20th, and I'm with Michael Hopkins. Michael, what did you enjoy that?
Oh, yes, Gary. That one, you know, it brings a tear to my eye. Because just to see how far we've come with the Vet Talk Radio Show and lies that we've touched.
It doesn't even sound like the same show that we do every week.
No, it doesn't.
Changed. Yeah. But we're still so passionate about it. And you've blazoned a trail, my friend.
Oh,
you
yes.
blaze into truth.
Yes, and it's a good feeling, Carrie. I mean, it is. It yes. is when you talk to like I do. I talk to a lot of veterans on a daily basis, yes. and with this show, this format, we continue to help veterans, their families,
yes.
People who aren't even veterans. You know, I have people sometimes, they're
the
not
show.
A veteran.
I love the show,
yeah,
and
they
I'm
just,
not a veteran.
Yeah, and I have them, they just go, I never knew that. I'm learning
yeah.
so much about, and then
yeah.
they'll remember.
It's a great broadcast, Michael. And when I listen back, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. It sounds
yeah, it,
so
it,
good.
It is.
Yeah.
It really
I'd
is.
I'd love to hear from you guys out there. If you can press one, we'll get you right on real quick to just shout out to the team live this morning. So just go ahead and press one if you have something to say or a quick shout out. Michael, so we're going to see you back here, of course. And we're going to once in a while, we're going to play back some of these shows during your season two. That's what this is all about. So we'll be playing back some of these episodes. You have quite a bit, a cache of amazing content.
Oh, yes. Yes,
that
we
covered
do.
Every topic under the sun. And so I can't wait. I love each and every episode. We love the veterans. We salute them. It's just been incredible. Let's see. We've got somebody standing by. Your phone number ends in 44. You're on with Carrie, Michael, and you're live on this Tuesday morning, September 20th of 2022. What's your name and where are you calling in from?
Hey, good morning. It's Noor.
Lord,
wow.
Angel. Hello, how are you? Well, Hoda, did you enjoy that playback of the show?
I did, and I was trying to think about how long ago it was. So that was July 20th, 2021.
I think so. That was a long
time. Wow.
Yeah, listen, I just want to say we miss y'all, the Angels. We're going to have you guys back to do some new live stuff with us. There's so much
great.
Coming down the pike at the Vet Talk Radio Show. Next week, Michael, we've got some top topics that we're going to put on the show, a countdown of the top topics. So we'll get that on for next week's broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward
so much
to
more. Yeah. So, Noor Jahan, it's great that now you're at Clarksville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
We never forget the Angels. And, of course, shouting out Nicole Marie, one of the other Angels, Michael's producers, and Katrina from Paris, Texas. All right. Noor, great to have you with us. Michael, I'm so excited. This is going to be nice. I loved it. I was literally enjoying sitting there and relaxing and enjoying the show with all the veterans. Normally I'm busy talking. So this was so much fun.
Oh, yes,
and
it, yes it was.
It. Yeah, I sipped
I
my
enjoyed
coffee.
It too, Carrie. It
so
was
I can't
just
wait
painting
to hear from
picture.
Your veteran friends. I hope they enjoyed the show today. I really do. This was a great playback on how
oh, yes.
the Vet Talk Radio Show started. And so good stuff. So, all right, guys. So next week, Michael will be back here. Hey, I want to do something a little bit longer next week. Michael, can we get an hour together for Vet Talk on the next broadcast?
We most certainly can, Carrie Hines. That's...
All right. You heard it right
yes.
here. Next Tuesday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, 1 hour of Vet Talk Radio Show. Don't miss it. We got a whole lot. And it'll be fresh and new. All right, we'll see you back here. Michael, great job. Noor Jahan, always great to have you with us as well. And
oh, yeah.
to all the fans, we love the veterans. You guys hold it down for this country, and we appreciate it. So, Michael, what's the tagline?